Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Mariam Jacobs is going to be back on with us today to speak on the damaging effects on human beings already broken while in the penal system. Mariam will talk first about the number of prisons and prisoners in Netherlands, how penalty is determined. What does a judge look at? Detention damage, solitary confinement, housing in prison, what and where it looks like, their daily programs in healthcare in prisons. She will also discuss the forensic clinics. Before we bring Mariam on, I'd like to let everyone know that things these days are very difficult for everyone because of the global pandemic. Some people feel it's time for everyone to get back to normal because of the vaccines that they have allowed us to have. But it's not yet fully resolved, and there are so many people out in the communities, in our own homes, that are really tired of being closed in during this whole entire pandemic. But we have to think about those behind those prison walls that are caged in their prison cells for the pandemic for so long now. And we wonder, how long will this be before they will be able to come out of their cells more often and get back to normal? Because right now, with everyone closed in, visits, personal contact, have been on suspension for over a year. People are not able to go to the gym. They're not able to go to the library. They're not able to do anything. So we have to think about the things that are going on in the prisons in this country. And Mariam, as I say, is going to be talking about detention damage, the solitary confinement, housing in prisons and what it's like, and the daily programs in healthcare. So let's welcome our guest once again, Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. Mariam, are you on with us?
Yes, Leona. Hello.
How are you this morning, this afternoon for you?
Yeah.
You're 6 hours ahead.
Yes, I'm 6 hours ahead of you. I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So what do we have today? First of all, I wanted to congratulate you on completing your book. I understand that you came to your final chapter.
Yes, I have completed the book, and now I have some readers who are reading it and will give me feedback, and then I hope to publish it.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm interested in reading it. You have so much insight and so much knowledge into a lot of things that have gone on in the world, and now especially in the prison system, the penal system. And I want to hear more about some of the things that you've been doing.
What do you mean, what I was doing in the prison or with my writing or?
Everything in general, but what brought you to the psychosocial therapy, you know, the knowledge, what brought you to the interest of all these things that you're working on?
Well, the main thing for me is that the justice approach, so looking at the person behind whatever is keeping him busy or whatever he's suffering from, meeting that person behind his issues, his disorder or his crime, and mentor him or her on his journey to more self-insight, more awareness, healing, because I think that's the most important thing to do, and I want to contribute to that with people. I do that personally with incarcerated people, but also with people who are at home, but I also do that on a macro level by looking at how is the system arranged and what is needed for that person to get to that process, because that's, in my view, the only process that leads someone to healing and stops from recidivism. Because if someone has insight in his own life, in his own issues, in his own crime, we also look at the crime, then he gets insight, and insight prevents from making the same mistakes again, because then he knows how things are and how what led him to the crime. So for me, it's very rewarding, and I'm very happy to do that, to contribute to the journey of these people.
You know, I noticed that we've been talking around a lot of issues every Wednesday when we have the show, and I noticed that at one point in time, we were going to be talking about healthcare in prisons. And I wanted to bring up a subject on the healthcare issues, and I want to get your feedback on this. We have a healthcare system that in the prisons, the penal system, that it's not really working as it should be for the incarcerated men and women in this country. I recently had heard of an episode where this has happened, from what I did with my research, it's happened to others as well, where the incarcerated, when they have a medical issue that they need to have addressed, and it cannot be done in the prison, the direct prison system, other than going outside the prison and going to a corrections hospital. I noticed that there was an incident where a young man had a problem with his shoulder, and prior to that with his knee, a torn meniscus, and then with the shoulder, it was pretty much like a torn rotator cuff. He was sent to a facility, a corrections hospital, where they did the operation after 2 years of suffering. And then when they did the operation, they removed the cartilages in his shoulder and 5 years ago in his knee, making it impossible for the young man to do any exercises at all, because it would be bone on bone in the knee and in the shoulder. What do you think about situations like that, where these correction hospitals outside of the penal system, outside of the prison itself, are working in conjunction with the prison officials? And this person that they did this to had already filed a lawsuit against the prison for the abuses and the deprivations that were going on in the prisons. So this was their way of retaliating against this man because of the lawsuits. And so they retaliated against him by removing the very things that would keep him going, that would keep him functioning. And in my research, I found that this is not the first time it has happened. What is your feedback on situations like that?
Well, first of all, this is, for, in my point of view, this is a form of torture, because it's deliberately harming a human body. And I think this situation matches the way the criminal system works, because the people inside the prison are seen by everybody as the enemy. Another thing is that dehumanization of the human being, of the imprisoned man and women, makes it possible to do all these kind of things, because it doesn't matter, because that person is not a human anymore. And that's the scary part of the prison system. They are outlawed. When I look at responsibility, then I think the biggest problem of the whole system is the fact that nobody really takes responsibility for the welfare of the prisoners, because they think they are not worth any welfare, well-being. So what you see is that guards are only feel only responsible for society. They have this idea that they have to keep society safe by keeping people in their place in the cages in the prison. They are focused on that, not on the prisoner, but they are focused on keeping society safe. If you look at the society itself, the people in society, you know, the United States is a democracy, and people in society, they voted for politicians who developed this system. So indirectly, they agree with it. Again, there also, these politicians do not take responsibility for the well-being of the prisoners. And then you have the corporations who are by law not responsible for the welfare of prisoners, because they fall under the 14th Amendment, and they legally only are responsible for their own stockholders. So, and the prisoner himself is not allowed to be responsible for himself, because the only thing he has to do is following protocols and rules. That means that nobody has a responsibility for the welfare of the prisoners. And then you get these very dangerous situations of beatings, psychological torture, what you describe of this man in the prison hospital, who has been tortured by deliberately harming the human body. And for me, that feels very dangerous. Another thing is, there is an absence of legal responsibility, but there's also an absence of moral responsibility, which means that, you know, if you are a human being, you do have, from your nature as a human being, you feel morals, you feel values that makes a human human. Like what I saw, I've been looking at the body cams of this guard that murdered George Floyd. He had a knee in the neck of George Floyd, and he was simply following protocols without thinking for himself that he was doing the wrong thing, which killed a man. So what you see is an indifference towards the prisoners. Nobody cares about the prisoners, and that means that you can do everything what you want with them without really huge consequences. And what you describe as an individual case that matches how the system is developed, how it functions, and how people look at these incarcerated people. So yes, this can happen. So prison for me feels as a very, very dangerous place.
You know, I also wanted to ask, you know, you had mentioned also discussing at one time solitary confinement, the detention damage, you know, housing in prison and what it looks like. Can you speak a little bit more on those things, because, and also the differences and how it is where in these other countries abroad, like the Netherlands. What are the comparisons between the detention and the solitary confinement and housing in prisons? Solitary confinement, do they have that in the Netherlands?
We do have solitary confinement in the Netherlands, but we follow the rule that solitary confinement longer than 15 days harms the brain and harms the human being. So if we use solitary confinement, it's never more than 15 days. And during these 15 days, and we try to keep it shorter, every day a psychologist is going to see how the prisoner is doing, if he can cope with the solitary confinement. Because if we do not do that, and we are going to harm the prisoner, then we get more problems also in society. we want to have when prisoners are getting out, we want them to be healed, be restored, be rehabilitated, because we want to keep a safe society. That's working towards a safe society. Another difference is also the length of the sentences. In the United States, it's sometimes crazy how long somebody has to be incarcerated without any decent program. We know that detention damage is always done when somebody gets incarcerated, because being locked up is an unnatural thing to do. But okay, we do have prisons too, because somebody did commit a crime, and we should not forget that. So he has to make it up to society. He has to pay a debt towards society. But we try to keep the detention as short as possible because of the detention damage. So our sentences are focused on rehabilitation and not only on punishment and retaliation, because if you only focus on revenge and retaliation, you break these people, and if they get released, then you get a dangerous society, because these people are not used anymore to live a domestic life. They don't know anymore what a domestic life is. They have forgotten the social codes in a society. So how are they going to be safe for society? What you see many times is that they are falling back in the things they have learned before they committed the crime, like, you know, the drug issues or burglary or whatever, because that's what they knew, that's what they did, and that's what they still can do because they have not learned anything else. Somebody in a cage cannot at once become a citizen out of nowhere. You know, he has to learn that. And that also has to do with responsibility. If somebody in the streets commits a crime, at that moment, he did not feel any responsibility. So he did not feel a moral responsibility, and he crossed the line of legal responsibility. He did something what he shouldn't have done. Then he gets incarcerated. And what he needs is a process in which he learns to develop his own responsibility. What does it mean to feel responsibility? What does moral responsibility mean? How does responsibility play a role in your life? In what way were your parents responsible for you? All these questions contribute to awareness about this subject, because this is a crucial subject for people before they get released in the streets, because we want to have responsible citizens when they get out of the prison. But instead of going through that process, you lock them up, you take away all responsibilities because they are not allowed to be responsible, and then after crazy amount of years, 20 years, 30 years, they are released. They still don't know what responsibility means. And at the same time, society expects them to behave responsible. Well, it's insane, of course. Everybody knows that it's impossible. And that's the most important detention damage that's done, when you lock up without any treatment. So what the United States does is, and sometimes you hear guards talking about, I do this job because I want to keep society safe. But what a lot of people think is that society will be safe when you lock up all the bad people, whatever bad means, but people, you know, dangerous people, bad people, lock them up and that society is safe. But it simply doesn't work that way. That's like a fairy tale for little children. So society is also responsible to give prisoners the possibility or force them into healing process, treatments to become a citizen that can safely live in a society. But you see the opposite, and that's why you get mass incarceration. That's one of the main reasons why you have mass incarceration in the United States. Nobody takes responsibility. And without responsibility, a human being becomes dangerous. Because then if I don't feel responsible, then I can kill my neighbor because I don't feel anything. So it's a dangerous society too.
I find in the United States, they take people. First of all, I think a lot of the sentencing, a lot of the mass incarceration is the result of biases in this country. It is the result of, I think, vengefulness. It's a result of the money-making efforts in prisons. I noticed somewhere on Facebook someone had mentioned that their loved one was supposed to be coming home and a few months, and they were really upset because something to do with a friend of his who was also incarcerated may have done something wrong, and now her boyfriend or husband won't be out until 2022. I don't know how true that is, but if it is true, it seems terrible that somebody else should be penalized for someone just because they know one another. But I want to say real quickly, Marion, and I want you to go on a little bit more about the differences, the comparison between the countries. But one of the things in this country, I find that everyone makes mistakes. And we have people that are sentencing others, human beings, to prison for life sentences, life without parole, and even death row. And the thing that I find terrible is that they do this with someone that is a first-time offender, people that have never been in trouble before, you know, people that have had meaningful jobs, that have been, you know, in school and doing the right things, and they make a mistake, and they get a life sentence or a life without, and even death row. And I think that kind of sentencing is very, very harsh. I think it's unnecessary, but this is the country we live in, and it's about vengeance. If someone doesn't like you, they will go all out to make sure that you, while you are incarcerated for that life sentence or that life without parole sentencing, that you spend the rest of your life in pain, suffering. And to me, these people that are doing these things, they may not even, in most cases, they don't know the incarcerated individuals. They just know that they don't like them for some reason, or they're connected with the victim's family or the victim's friends or whatever. And I notice this happens a lot as well.
Well, what I think is that if somebody gets a life sentence, it depends on, because we also know have some people who have a life sentence, but that's not only connected to the crime. It's connected to the process that somebody is going through while incarcerated. If somebody is incarcerated for murder and he gets treatment, and the treatment shows, and he gets examined regularly, and the treatment shows that that person is not capable or unwilling to learn from his mistakes to get in, to get to more self-insight, then there is a possibility that that person stays a danger, and that could be a reason to keep him in prison. But that's another intention to keep somebody in prison than giving a life sentence only for that, for that crime without any treatment afterwards. If somebody has committed a crime, but he gets this treatment and he comes to self-awareness and he comes to understanding why he did crime, then he can take responsibility for it, afterwards, he is capable of feeling guilty of it, and then he is healed, and then he can go back to society. So the length of a sentence should not only be connected to the crime, but also to the progress somebody is making while being incarcerated. And in the United States, there are no programs. Yeah, well, there are programs for the public to keep the public satisfied, but there are not real good programs. And if there are, then still the environments where people live in for 24 hours a day are not really healing. They are even more damaging. And that's the big problem. I mean, when I work with the incarcerated people here, I also talk about the crime. The crime should not be forgotten. And the offender is, he will always stay responsible for the crime that he has committed. But that's something else than retaliation, endless retaliation or endless revenge. You know, when I help a prisoner in developing feelings of responsibility and guilt for his crime, then he learns to become mature. People who are not taking responsibility are in fact not mature. Responsibility is something, you know, is a characteristic of being mature. So if politicians do not take responsibility for a decent and humane treatment of prisoners, then these politicians, I don't care whatever position they are in, but then they are not mature. It has to do with maturity. And there are too many immature people who make decisions related to the prison system and the treatment of prisoners. And this is a really huge, huge problem. And then you see the randomness, what you described in the beginning of this man who had the surgery. Think about that doctor. If you become a doctor, then you promise that you will do everything to save lives, to heal people. That's your job. That's why somebody becomes a doctor. And if a doctor is able to deliberately harm a human body, what kind of doctor are we talking about then? Where is his or her responsibility for that physical body? The indifference that I see in prison, that nobody cares for the prisoners, and the absence of responsibility makes that prisoners are fully surrendered to dangerous people.
I think in Massachusetts, I mean, in this country, we have just like any individual, we have criminal doctors and lawyers, because we have lawyers and doctors who do their job, and as you say, they make a vow. They make a vow to
exactly
to do it. And then you have them, when it comes down to it, you have some that are just the opposite. And I call them corrupt, because we do have a lot of corruption in this country. And these people, they take these vows, but yet, just like this Dr. Carrilla, you know, at this Lemuel Shattuck Hospital, I mean, I'm sure she took a vow when she got her degree and taking a vow to serve these people, not to destroy them. But yet she does something in coordination with the penal system of the prison officials. She goes and she does damage, permanent damage, to some of the people that she's supposed to be healing. This goes on, and this is a corrupt, in my opinion, this is a corrupt doctor. Then we have lawyers like Norman Zellkind, this lawyer in Massachusetts. He too must have taken a vow, like all lawyers do, to serve the people, to do the best they can. But yet he's either, like another corrupt person, taking the money of a client, more money than deserve to meet with the client for 1 or 2 hours and charge $4,500. This kind of lawyer does not deserve to be a lawyer. And we have people like that in this country. And unfortunately, they get away with it. They get away with it because they know how to get around. They know how to take advantage of people. And they know how to... What happens is lawyers will charge for emails where the client doesn't even know that they're being charged outrageous prices. So lawyers will, they'll email back and forth one another. They might email the relative of a prisoner. And they're using this as their excuse for charging thousands and thousands of dollars. These people are corrupt.
Yeah, and then you get a role reversal because then the offender on the street becomes the victim in the system. And the staff in and around the system become the offenders. Because a doctor like that is, in fact, an offender. If what you say about lawyers, they are, in fact, offenders. So what you see is a role reversal. The crimes that are forbidden on the streets are, illegal or can be done in the system.
They're tolerated.
Exactly. That's what the word what I was looking for. So then you get and that happens, that role reversal. So the offenders on the streets are become the victims of the system in the system. What you see then is that for the law they still are offenders, but when it comes to moral responsibility, they become on a law they can become outlawed and they become victims. You know, what you describe about this doctor, what you describe about the lawyers, all, you see again that also these people don't take responsibility. And that's when it becomes dangerous. So if you look at all these examples and you ask yourself, how does responsibility play a role in this? That you cannot find any responsibility. Because if I am a lawyer and I ask you all kinds of money without giving you my service, then I am not responsible towards you. So that's what you see on every level. With lawyers, you see it in healthcare, you see it in the food industry, who deliver sometimes dangerous food. They can do that because they are not responsible towards the prisoners. Again, responsibility. And we can go on and on and on. And that makes society so dangerous. Because that's not only happening in the prison system. But the prison system is a mirror. It reflects society. So it's also what's happening, maybe on a more hidden way, in society itself. Look at all the homeless people. Look what happens when all the refugees try to reach the United States and the children were separated from their parents. Where was the responsibility, the political responsibility there? So what I think is that the United States has to grow up, has to become mature. They have to become mature and take responsibility for the things they are doing. But in this way, nobody can be held accountable. You can go, you know, if you go for the doctor, you go to the court, and then what happens then? People have to be held.
The courts usually side with the doctors or the lawyers. That's the sad thing, because that shows there's corruption even within the court system.
Exactly. So there is no justice done. There's only a side that's chosen. But that's something else. Choosing a side is something else than judge about something. And in court, there's a judge, and he or she has to judge on a neutral way and not choose a side. Choosing sides is a way of manipulation. It's the same with the plea bargain. The most cases, you know, are negotiations. That has nothing to do with doing justice. That has to do with money.
Yeah. The plea bargain is it's an injustice to people because they're given an option that they can either get a life sentence or life without, or they can get 25 years if they do a plea bargain, when in fact many of them might be innocent. I know that there's been innocent people that have taken plea bargains just to prevent themselves from going away for a life sentence when they didn't even do the crime. I think it's an awful thing for them to do.
Yeah, and that's also a form of corruption because plea bargains should not exist. It should not exist.
No.
We have no plea bargain here in the Netherlands. You go to court. Everybody's going to court if something is done. We have no plea bargain.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead.
No, these plea bargains, these situations that people are put in, you know, it's almost like I say with the doctors, the lawyers, the judges. You can pick out who it is that's corrupt when you hear these judges or when you hear these lawyers or when you see these doctors doing what they're doing. But I have to say the politicians, as you mentioned, going back to the politicians, they are a lot of the problem as well because they know all these things that we're talking about. You know, they know about these things happening, and yet they don't go into the prisons as often as they should. And they should also go in randomly, you know, unannounced, and go into the prisons to see what is going on. Because I hear from prisoners all the time that when the prison officials know that there's someone going in from a politician going in, that they make everything, they clean up the place, they make everything seem like it's in perfect condition and everything's going smoothly because they know they're coming. And to me, if they don't know they're coming, the politicians, the lawmakers, they'll see the exact way the prisons are run and how the prisoners are treated if they go in randomly. Politicians go into a prison rarely, unless there's something going on seriously. They don't really go into the prisons as often as they should. And when they do, they let them know they're coming. And I don't see that as being done appropriately. I don't see that as being overseeing anything.
Well, I think it's part of the game that is played to keep mass incarceration going as a million-dollar industry. Because for the public, by doing it this way, they can show to the public that there is a kind of control. It's nonsense, of course, but you know, you can say, okay, we said it regularly, and we see public, we have this under control because we check. But of course, it's nonsense because when they announce it, when they are coming, then they only see a kind of model prison. And they can say to the public, see, the prison is going, is running well, everything's taken care of, and the public is satisfied. And a million-dollar industry can maintain. You have to understand that all these parties that are connected to the million-dollar industry will do everything to keep this going. They don't want to have prison reform. They don't want to have a change. And they can make society believe that it's all okay. You know, in Second World War, in World War II, they did the same with the concentration camp. In Germany, there was a concentration camp. It was in German, it was called Theresienstadt. And that was a model concentration camp. And they had that because in Denmark, there were Jews from Denmark who were put in Theresienstadt in that concentration camp. And the Danish people, the Danish politician, they want the Red Cross to take a look at how the Danish Jewish people were doing in that camp. So what the Germans did, they made it into a model camp with all kinds of cafes, a little restaurants, a little shops, and it was like a village. And so the people of the Red Cross, they visited that camp and said, hey, the people are doing very well here. It's exactly the same story.
Exactly.
And the quality. Yes. So it's part of that game. And I think prison reform is mostly about a change of mindset, and it starts in the community with stop judging each other, stop condemning each other, stop comparing yourself to the other and say to the other that he is wrong and that you are right. See each other as equal, and that has to do with a mindset. Now it is all about who is right, who is wrong. There is a militarized police in the streets who is checking if you are doing exactly, if you're showing exactly the right behavior. We all make mistakes. We all have a good side and a bad side. That's human nature. There is so much judgment on a small scale, people towards each other. And when you make bigger mistakes, then you get locked up without any treatment, without anything. And they expect you to be in that heinous system, and then at once you will be healed out of nowhere. Well, that's crazy, of course. But that's all part of the game of the politicians and the corporations.
You know, you mentioned the food, and I've heard so many people, and I know for a fact, the food that is served in the prisons to some prisoners, the food has been known to have rat bites in it. The food has been known to be left over from other prisoners that didn't want the food, and they grind it up and serve it to another prisoner or other prisoners. These things that happen even with the food in the prisons, you know, the things that happen with a lot of these things. And everyone on, a lot of times, even on Facebook, they're talking about it. They're talking about how their loved ones said they were eating food that had bites in it and everything. They starve their prisoners, or they give them so little food that they are so hungry they eat this rotted up. Some say they have even maggots in them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how anybody can hear these things. Anybody that's influential, anyone that can make a difference, that can go into the prisons, that can check it out. We have lawmakers, and we have people that are so lazy that they don't want to go into the prisons, but they want to be out in the media. They want to be in these places where their faces are going to be seen, where they're going to look like they're doing something. We have that happening with lawyers. We have that happening with politicians. We have that happening with so many people in this country. Some have gone out to other countries like the Netherlands, like Germany, like Norway, have gone out to these places. They have seen so much success in other countries, in the way other countries have run their penal system, the way they have the successes that go on in other countries. The maximum in most countries are 25 years for any crime. Mm. They see all these things happening. They see that the recidivism rate is so little to nothing. And yet, in the United States, they choose not to make changes. And that's where you talk about the monies, the power, the greed. This is exactly what happens in this country. This is Nazi-type living. If other countries can be so successful, why are the people in the United States that have influence, the lawmakers, people that can make a difference, why is it that they're not trying to do this? Why aren't they starting to have some kind of projects where they can start letting some people out, letting them out into a transitional facility for a few years to see, or whatever it takes, to see how they react in these type of settings, instead of having them in all these maximum security prisons or the medium or the on death row? Why aren't they trying to follow suit with other countries? I don't understand it. They've even gone as far as taking away their voting rights, their citizenship in the country when they go to prison. They are no longer able to vote. They are no longer considered a citizen of the United States. I don't understand these things.
Yeah, and I think that's devastating, taking away the voting rights and make them taking away the citizenship in that way. And then for the public, it seems that they have rights, that there are prison rights, but then making inside the system the procedure so difficult that the prisoner almost cannot go through all these procedures in order to get to court. So that's why I say they are outlawed. And it's very sad and shameful, and it's also for me a form of barbaric, because a society that treats its own citizens that way is not civilized anymore. A while ago, there was a meeting, there was a meeting between China, another country, and the United States, and maybe more countries. It's a while ago. And the person who from the United States, he was pointing to China, and he said he was talking about the human rights in China that are damaged, about the concentration camp for the Muslim minority there, etc. But then the person from China said, well, you first look at your own country, your own prison system, and what you do with the black people. And I thought, this is good, because the United States does not have the right to point to other countries when it comes to human rights, because look at how they are dealing with their own citizens.
Yeah.
Both on the streets and in the system. It's crazy that if I am, and I am white, of course, but if I would be black and I would go to a grocery store, that I am checked all the time because, you know, or I'm driving my car as a black person and I'm stopped over every time by police. That's like a police state. There is a disease in the United States, a psychological disease, and you see it back in the prison system, because the prison system is so sick. It's so sick.
Really. Yeah. I get so upset when I think about it, because what happens with these people, they have these titles. They have an opportunity to really make some changes, positive changes, but they act like humans. They act like normal people on the street, the average citizen, that they look at people in a negative light without looking at their position, their own position, and what they should be doing. And I see this happening a lot. I mean, with a lot of even politicians. You know, if you catch prison officials in a lie, you don't just let it run over your head. You don't just let it go. You know, if they're lying to you at that moment, at that time, then you should know they're lying to people, to other people, and they're doing this on an ongoing basis. But I've had knowledge of politicians who will be lied to, and yet they let it go by like it was nothing. When people are crying out for help, people incarcerated are crying out for help. And they're saying, you know, they don't have their belongings, or they're kept in on a block without justification, or they're kept in solitary confinement. And then politicians might call over to the prison, and they're told that they're not in solitary confinement, or they may have their belongings. And these political leaders just accept it. You know, they don't challenge the prison officials, and that's the big problem.
Yeah, I
was going to say they're the ones that are looking stupid, not the prisoners at that point in time, but the prison officials laughing because they're able to get over on the political leaders, the lawmakers, and that is a joke. It is a farce. It really is.
Yeah, it is, and also this has to do with responsibility. It's scary to see that nobody seems to feel any responsibility. That's why all these things can happen. If people would take their responsibility, maybe not a legal responsibility, but then their moral responsibility, which make them mature, then these things could not happen, because then you can be held accountable. Now, nobody can be held accountable. Everybody can do what he wants. And if somebody is held accountable, if you look at, because that's also what I found in my research, what you sometimes see is when a prisoner is being beaten to death. Let's take that example of this man a few years ago who was boiled in the shower. You remember that? We've been talking about it before. Yeah. What I read was that the two guards were held accountable in court, and what happened was they did one got fired, but they did not get sued for murder, and the Department of Corrections paid the family $4.5 million. They do that, and you see that more often, that if there is if it goes to court, then they pay a family a certain amount of money. They do that because for the prison system, it's cheaper to pay a family than to change the whole policy. So by paying a family money, society thinks, hey, see, something is happening, justice is done. But behind that farce, there is this reason that if they pay the family in an individual lawsuit, they don't need to change the policy. They don't need to do prison reform. The same is now happening with that police officer that killed George Floyd. He's going to be sentenced. It's an individual case. So who says that the whole police is going to change now?
Actually, I just learned this morning that Chauvin is his name. I just learned morning they are actually going for having a new trial. Now, first he got sentenced, and then the judge gave him 90 days, I guess, before he's even going to tell what his sentence will be. And now, before even 2 weeks later, they're talking about a new trial.
Do you know what the reason is?
They're saying something about one juror or a couple of jurors, something to do with the jurors. I don't know. But
they are going to do it all over again.
I don't know. There has been nothing more said about it other than the fact that they're looking at going for a new trial. But the judge that sat in on that, I thought negatively of that judge because, you know, so, as I say, judges, they're biased. And sometimes judges, they seem like they're in favor of the defendant. And when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to situations like that. So I didn't, I think if it wasn't for a juror, the jury, having a judge decide if a person is guilty or not, I think that in some cases like that, that the judge would probably have gone in favor of that defendant. But because it was a jury and it was globally watched, then I believe the judge knew he had to, you know, let the jury decide if he was guilty or not. And the judge would do the sentencing as requested by the defendant and his lawyer. And that's, the judge would have done the sentencing, but the judge said he was going to wait 90 days to give the sentence. Had that been anyone else, you know, that wasn't in uniform or having a title, that person would have been found guilty and have gotten a life without or death penalty immediately day that he was found guilty. This is another example of biases in this country and corruption
and the lack of responsibility.
Exactly.
That's really important because, you know, as you said, this has gone globally over the whole world. We have seen it. But after the killing of George Floyd, how many black people have been killed afterwards by police?
Exactly.
You see, and that's the whole thing. There is no, you know, what you asked me in the beginning of this radio show, what's the difference between the Netherlands and the United States? I think one of the most important differences that we treat people as the humans as they are, like we are all human. And I think that's also on the streets. I never have to be afraid for police. But on the other side, it's also, we are not allowed to carry any guns. That's also a very big issue. There are so many people in the United States who walk around with all kinds of weapons, with all kinds of guns, which make it also difficult and more dangerous when you have to arrest somebody. We don't have this issue. We don't have this gun issue. We, you know, our children are going to school, and the word lockdown, we have never heard about the word lockdown related to schools. And you in the United States, you have these signs with all the rules, what to do when there is a lockdown, when somebody's going to attack a school. We don't know what that is. We got to know the word lockdown because of the pandemic. But before that, we never used that word lockdown. So it's like some, you know, when I think about these things, it's like the United States is a complete different universe. So many issues are so related. It's a web of influence. They all influence each other. And this being harsh on crime, harsh, you know, being tough on drugs, tough on crime, politician, you know, and when you look at the federal politics, they have this idea they want to have democracies all around the world. They wanted to try to have dictator countries. They want to turn into democracies. But I think I cannot say that the United States itself is a democracy. For me, it doesn't feel as a democracy. You have a voting right. That's the only thing. But for me, it's much more a fascistic state.
I remember a few years ago when they first talked about getting rid of guns, the sales of guns increased dramatically. I mean, people were out there buying weapons right and left. They were buying, so many weapons were sold that year that they talked about the possibility of getting rid of it. I want to say, too, they talk about people not, you know, going for these guns and not... you know, going through an application to get the guns and not selling them to crazy people. One of the things that they fail to do, and this shows how people in this country think, they fail to realize that somebody can be normal.
Yeah, that's a good one. This is right on spot, what you say.
Exactly.
Yes.
They can have a situation or situations in their lives that they can be normal, yeah. And yet somewhere along the line, something's going to happen that's going to affect them traumatically. And weapons can be bought at a time when somebody is completely normal, or they can be bought at a time when somebody is completely normal, but at that specific time, they're going through some major issues, and they're not thinking rational. And this is what upsets me, is because they sell weapons to people that are normal. They don't know what's going on at that specific time in their life. And so when they talk about only certain people being able to buy weapons, they need to look at all these options and all these situations that can change. It's like prisoners being stereotyped when all prisoners are different. The same situation with gun applications. You know, they don't know if the person is going through something at the time. A person could be normal. They can be having influential jobs. Our politicians, we don't know what might happen with I remember a politician years ago, he went bankrupt. This was in Yarmouth on Cape Cod. He went bankrupt. The man was normal until he had that traumatic experience as an influential person who all of a sudden went bankrupt, and he shot himself in his office. So there's so many different situations when they talk about.
But it starts already with why does, you know, what is his fascination with guns? Like you're still living in the Wild West.
Yeah.
Why do people always say, I want to have a gun because I need to defend myself? But who does he need to defend himself from another person who also carries a gun to defend himself? And on and on and on. It's, and then I think, what's this huge fear for each other in society? There's black and white are afraid of each other. People are afraid of each other, so they need to carry guns. Trump was afraid for the refugees, so he wants to build a wall. It's all based on fear. We lock all everyone up who we think is bad because we are afraid. We need a safe society. We need, well, there are so many times I read and heard that sentence, we want to have a safe society. Well, I think I feel much more safe in my own society, and we never talk about safe society or not, but we have no guns and we trust each other. In my street, in my village, nobody has a gun. So I go to the grocery store. I live close to a river. I walk a lot along the river. I can do that in the night at 11 o'clock in the evening, in the dark, in the wintertime. And I don't need to be afraid because there are no guns. And I don't say that nothing happens here in this country, but I cannot compare to the United States. In Europe, I think in the whole Europe, we are not allowed to have guns, only for sports, etc., but not in the house. We cannot look at all these accidents, you know, kids playing with these guns, not knowing what it is, and then accidentally killing somebody or whatever. The Stand Your Ground law, which was, I don't know if it's still there, but it shocked me, the Stand Your Ground law, how many people have been shot because by somebody who said, yeah, I felt insecure, or I felt as if I was attacked and nothing was going on. It was just fun to shoot a black guy. And he didn't get a sentence because it was Stand Your Ground. That's dangerous. What safe society? What is a safe society? If everybody has all these guns in the house and are afraid, there's so much based on fear. And the whole, that's also a part of why there is this prison system as it is.
You know, you mentioned weapons. Why so many weapons? And I want to, just my own philosophy on this. I had in my family, my father was in the military. My four brothers were in the military. My two sisters were in the military. When people in this country say their troops are fighting for this country, that's a farce. Because never until recently was anyone able to reach this country, to fight this country, to destroy it. This country for years and years and years has been interfering with other countries' wars. But had not this country, had not they gotten involved with other countries' businesses. And not only that, but every time they went to other countries to fight these other countries, they always came back with something. Someone's gold, someone's diamonds, you know, even oils and everything else. They're going out to those countries to get in wars was not for this country, other than the fact that this country was built on the bloodshed, the blood, sweat, and tears of people in other countries. So now we have the children, innocent people that have been destroyed or have lost their loved ones, their parents, during these wars. These kids grow up with a hatred for the United States because they've lost a parent or they've lost a sibling during these so-called Americans going over to fight for America's country when America's country was not at risk. We have situations like this, just like in this country, when, like you mentioned, people of color getting shot down by the police. What about those children that are left without a parent because their parent got shot or killed by the police for no reason at all? These kids are going to grow up with the same kind of hatred that other people in other countries have for this country because they've lost innocent relatives or innocent loved ones because of the ignorance or the hatred or the biases or the gung-ho, the powers that didn't need to be put in place in those situations. So these people are going to have this hatred for the law enforcement. They're going to have hatred for the country. This is where all of this need for guns, for weapons are, because people who have done injustices to other people are now afraid that they are going to be retaliated against for taking the lives of innocent people because of the power they feel the United States has. This country has gone into other countries they didn't need to go into. And I say with weapons, if you don't need to have a fear for others, you don't need to have a fear for others if you're treating others humane, if you're treating others like they're people. We have a country where so many people want that power. They want the uniforms. They want the titles. And we have a sick society that believes that just because you have a uniform on or you have a title, that you can do anything you want to anybody you want. That's how sick our society is. Because it could be one of their own that someday, right now there's a lot of racism in this country. So a lot of people are being affected because of that bias. But there's a lot of Caucasians that don't realize it. But once we have law enforcement, we have people in power that are getting away with it, it's going to reach the Caucasian race too. Because they're going to be looking at the power over even them. And there's a lot of Caucasians right now that are seeing this happening to their loved ones who are in prison. Because those people that are in prison or even in the communities that don't have the money that the upper class has, they're looked at just like any person of color. They're also looked at as being nothing. And they're going to be affected more so. It's starting out now. It's been going on like this, but it's going to increase. The situations are going to increase. So when we talk about why a need for weapons, if you do harm to someone, you're going to be fearful that they're going to retaliate or come back at you. So you want the weapons to protect yourself. But if you treat people humane and you treat people like they deserve to have some respect, there's no need for weapons in anywhere in the world.
No, and I think it's like a lot of people have this fascination for being a hero, what you said about the uniform, sensitive for the uniform, parades, military, being a hero, you know, and carrying a gun to feel a kind of power or something. And then I think why... You know, somebody who has this need to feel power, then those are the people who are the most insecure. Because if you are not insecure, you don't need a gun. Then you are strong from yourself instead of that you need a uniform or a gun or whatever. And that has to do with also, I think it has to do with being immature.
There
is something No, also immature. I think somebody who is mature and responsible on a moral way, on a legal way, then he has a consciousness, you know, he thinks from his rational consciousness, he makes the right decision, and he doesn't need to show himself off by with a uniform or a guns or whatever.
I agree with you on immaturity, and I also think that a lot of these people are insecure because they feel that they have to be accepted by their higher class peers. And so they have to do whatever they think is going to impress their peers. That's immaturity, and that's also insecurity.
And I think that it also has to do with hierarchy, you know, where you are standing in the hierarchy of power. And for as long as there is a strong hierarchy, that there is no personal responsibility. Let's call it not moral responsibility, but personal responsibility. And that's, I think, what is for me was the most important lesson or thing that I saw in the body cams with Chauvin. How do you say that man? Chauvin.
Chauvin.
That he was not able to take personal responsibility. That's why George Floyd died. He just did what the protocol said. But if he would have thought for himself on an independent way, he would have known that he was doing a dangerous thing. You feel? So, but now he can hide behind the protocol. He can say, yeah, well, I'm not guilty because I did what the protocol said.
But quite a few of his...
But then you're not a grown up because you don't think for yourself. Being mature means that you think for yourself independently. And if you only follow... Yeah?
Quite a few of his peers, quite a few of the law enforcement testified that he overstepped his boundaries. So it was the first time that I've ever heard, but this is the first time I've ever heard of law enforcement going against law enforcement. But they did testify in court during his trial that he did wrong, that he was very wrong. And it was their testimonies that actually stuck with the jurors, because they know that if his own peers are going against him and talking that he overstepped his protocols, then that's how he ended up getting sentenced. Now, it just showed the reason they're looking for a new trial is, I guess, one of the jurors was photographed with a Black Lives Matter shirt, and I don't know if that was prior to the trial. So that's what they're basing the new trial on.
But did the other police officers who were with him at that moment?
They are also going to be going to court. Now, I don't know if they're going to be going to court after, if they get a new trial, if they're going to be going to court after this new trial, or if they're going to go as scheduled. They're supposed to be going to trial, I think, this month, sometime this month. Hmm. But I don't know what happens if a new trial is granted. I don't know how that will work.
Okay. Well, what you said about, you know, what we talked about, this gun power and all these things that are happening, I think there is a lot of fear in society. And people might not be aware of it, but it's like the United States has become a fear-based society. And many times what we do, that's also what we see on personal level with when people have psychological issues, is the more fear, the bigger the ego is to hide that fear.
You know, I'm glad we have a psychosocial therapist on the show with us, because I've been getting these scammers calling, and the robocalls are getting ridiculous. These people need to have a psychosocial therapist talk to them. You know, I've got so many of these things, and I say, the government, that's another thing the government should be working on, and that's not being done. When you get 10, 12, 15 calls a day, especially when you're trying to run a show or do other things, it's ridiculous. But anyway, getting back to our discussion, I'm sorry.
You get all these calls now while we are having this show?
Yes, unfortunately, I have the phone on, the volume down. But the thing is, this is what's happening in this country. It's getting out of control. And there's nothing you can do about it, really. But
well, I think, you know, what we talked about, what we started with, like, you know, you wanted to, you asked me for the differences between the Netherlands and Northern Europe and the prison system in the United States. If you look at solitary confinement, then we know by evidence-based proof that solitary confinement longer than 15 days is harming the psyche of a person, and the brain can be damaged. The fact that it's still happening in the United States for weeks, for months, for even years, shows that there is no oversight. That's what you always say too. There is no oversight, and people don't take responsibility to treat the human beings behind bars on a human way. And it is important to see exactly why is it possible that this happens, that we have solitary confinement in a democratic country, in a modern country. How is it possible that we go against evidence-based research on it? Who is not taking responsibility? And I think you see the lack of responsibility on all levels. It starts, of course, in the politics, political level. They have made the law in a way that you can both punish people and speak about rehabilitation, because correction means both punishment and rehabilitation. So by using the word correction to the public, you can let the people in the public think that it's about rehabilitation, while you use the same word in the correctional institutions and you punish. This is an example of a lot of manipulation through politics in order to maintain the million-dollar industry. And it can be done this way in a legal way by manipulating important terms, by using the Southern strategy. I've talked about that in the past, and it's still happening. And the Southern strategy, it became famous in the term of Nixon, but it's still used, and it's also, it was already used by Hitler, and it means that you do things without saying it, so you don't talk about it, but you do it. So that's the opposite of being transparent, and that's what you see. That the whole mass incarceration is embedded in not being transparent, in the opposite of being transparent. A lot of bureaucracy. We never know exactly what's going on behind the walls. A lot of is hidden. And that also can, again, be connected to a lack of responsibility, because if we cannot be transparent, what is there that we have to hide? If you have nothing to hide, then you can be transparent.
Exactly.
And there is no transparency at all. So there is a lot to be hide. But the game around that is very smart. And the sort of strategy is still used. It's based on that strategy. And it was already in the Second World War that Hitler could use it to destroy the Jewish people, because nobody exactly knew what was happening in the concentration camps. He had a timetable of the trains. If you looked at the timetable of the trains, the death trains, you can't see on that timetable where it's about. It's like a normal train, nothing is happening. That's the sort of strategy. You see the same now with mass incarceration. The big public thinks that it's going to be okay with these prisoners. They're doing their time. It will be okay. And nobody realizes really that it's about a million-dollar industry. And we all know that it's a million-dollar industry, but nobody emphasizes it. No, it's not legal. It's not said. You know, it's all under the table. A lot hidden under the table. And the less transparency, the more secrets, and the more things are happening which are not good, not legal, and not responsible. And our loved ones behind the walls are the victims of that whole system.
Power and greed. Power and greed.
It is, if you really think not only with the mind, but with the heart, and you realize what citizens are doing to other citizens behind bars, no matter if they are guilty, innocent, whatever they have done, it's unbelievable. The fact that we have to talk about prisoners who are getting food with maggots in it, who are getting starved to death, the fact that we have to talk about that this is happening, it's already a shame. It's a shame for everybody. And everybody's, yeah, It's not what we are taught, and it's not what the Bible teaches us, especially the New Testament. It's never about revenge.
You know, I'm glad you said that, but I'm going to say something, and I wanted before we close, and we still have 9 minutes, almost 10 minutes, but I wanted you to talk about your book and what's, you know, some of the things of, but one of the things that I wanted to say is when we think about the people and the prisons in the country, this is the United States, and I say this all the time, this is the United States of America. The United States consisting of representatives from every country in the whole entire world. This is the country we should be proud of. One of the things that people forget is that there was persecution between the Irish and the English. There was persecution between the Arabs and the Jews. There was persecution between a lot of countries when they come over, when they're in this country. There was a lot of pain and sorrow and suffering going on over the biases, over the lands, a lot of these things. So everybody should know that their ancestors came over, their ancestors were afflicted and persecuted. So they should have some kind of compassion for those, not only in the prisons, but in the communities. They should be able to try to say, well, it happened in our race, it happened in our religion. And you mentioned the Bible. If you notice, when there's something going on a holiday at the Vatican, it's so crowded. People are all over the place because they want to be there because of the Pope. They're not there because of God himself. And this is what we have in this country, the flag. People are worshiping a flag, but yet they don't want to all come together to worship the one Most High. You know, they don't want to worship God, and this is why so much evil. Halloween, they're inviting Satan into their homes, celebrating Halloween, having the kids out there, you know, trick-or-treating. They're inviting evil into their homes, yet they don't celebrate things that pertain to the Christ Jesus for the ransom sacrifice. They don't worship the people that are actually worshiping the true God, but they will worship flags. They will invite evil into their homes on Halloween. You know, they do all these crazy things. Look at, when we look at April, March, when we look at the Passover, what are they celebrating? Easter. Easter is a paganistic holiday. The rabbit, the fertility. They're not worshiping the ransom sacrifice, but they're celebrating Easter eggs. And when you hear a pastor talk about happy Easter, then that shows he was taught by man. He taught himself through Bible scriptures, or he was taught by man, but he wasn't taught by searching the Bible the way he should. So all these things, it's all a farce.
Yeah, it's all very superficial because, you know, it's easy to go to church on Sundays, but it's much more difficult to live your religion from Monday to Saturday.
Thank you. Exactly.
You know, religion is something you do and you show by living your life and how you treat the people around you. And not by these superficial show things. You know, and a lot of people find that difficult. So it's easier than to go to church on Sunday and think, okay, I've done my duty and now I can do whatever I want. And when you look at what we talked about before about the American dream, which is a materialistic dream, it's about wealth, it is about money, then, and I look at the role of the corporations in it, and then we also get back to the million-dollar industry. People who make money out of torturing people, out of the pain and suffer from families of incarcerated people, they might make money out of it. Think about phone companies. Then I think on Sunday we worship God, and from Monday until Sunday, Saturday we worship the mammon. And the Bible said you cannot worship God and the mammon. I don't know if I say mammon right in English, but you know what I mean.
In the U.S. is God and man, or God and Satan. But that's very true what you're saying. That's very true what you're saying.
Mama, but don't you know the word mama? That's the god of the money.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So the Bible says you have to make a choice. You worship God or you ship, let's say, or you worship the money, the wealth, the money, the material.
I want to say something about money. I'm only going to say this one time. But there was a time when my son was in his last year of college, and I had made arrangements that I had fixed my basement up. So I had the upstairs and the downstairs was completely finished. So I had planned on traveling when I retired from my job. I had planned on retiring and renting my house out, you know, upstairs and down, and like apartments. And I'll tell you, I had a beautiful job. I had a beautiful home. My son was in his last year of college. I was almost ready to retire from my job, working for the state. And what happens is a tragedy happens. And when a tragedy happens, you lose everything. You know, I ended up losing my home. I ended up not because of any situation in anything that could be controlled, but I ended up losing my home. I ended up leaving my job. And I ended up traveling. I traveled to all these third world countries. And I now am in a situation, as most people in this country, that don't have anything. You lost all your wealth. You lost all your power. That's what we have in this country. People think that this money, this power is so important. But with God, he can give and he can take. He can give you the blessings of having all of these things. But if you misuse it, He can also take it away. People don't realize that all the evil that they're doing, because they want this power and they want this money. In the Bible, it talked about Nebuchadnezzar, who was a king. He owned everything. He was like a president. He owned everything. He didn't own it. It was given to him. It was allowed by God, our creator. But because Nebuchadnezzar wanted more and more and more and kept saying that he was getting it because he got it, and God warned him that he didn't get it because of him. He got it because of God. And he ended up losing everything. Well, that's what can happen in this country with these political leaders, with these people and these corporations. They want all this money, all this power, all this greed. But it can be taken in a split second. And I just want people to know that. Marion, you've got about 2.5 minutes, and I'd like to have you talk more on your book when it will be going out for publication.
Yes. First, I want to respond to what you just said, and that the only way you can have peace is with your heart and not with your wallet. Look at Kanye West and look at his ex-wife. They were married. They are multimillionaires. Now they are divorced. Now they are in all kinds of problems. It happens on every level. But what were you asking me? Sorry.
Yes. When will your book be going for publication?
Well, I hope this summer. My readers are going to revise the text, and I have to revise a little bit. And then there is an artist who works with me for the how it's going to look. So it will take a while, but the text itself is finished, and the text analyzes the penal system, how it's arranged, and what the patterns are, and what it's telling about the society in depth, not only on the surface, because that's well known, but what is happening beneath the surface. I hope it will be this summer or the end of the summer, because I want it to be really good when I publish it.
We can pick up on this next Wednesday, same time. But what I was going to say real quickly is every time we do the show, when it really starts to get interesting towards the end, that's when everything starts to get interesting the beginning of the show. But I want to thank you for being on, Mariam, and we'll pick up on this next week. But again, I just want everybody to know that wealth is not bringing happiness. Greed and power. All you're doing is trying to keep up with the Joneses, as they say, and it's not worth it, because everybody, even those that are higher in power and monies, they have to put on a farce, a front, when they're not really.
Yeah. I think, peace is only in the heart. that's where heaven is. Heaven is simply in your own heart. And try to grow up. Try to become mature. Take responsibility. That's my main message for now.
Exactly. And I want to say, when I was traveling, I've met so many people who lived in poverty, but they were so happy. They were hospitable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think about it, I'd rather live in a third world country than to live in a country that has to live a life of lies and just for that.
Yeah, it depends on what perspective on what rich means. Somebody who has nothing but it has peace in his heart is the richest person on earth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you, everyone. Stay tuned for next Wednesday, same time, 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Netherlands time.
Yes.
And I want to thank you, Marian, as always, for coming on the show. You've been awesome, and I'd love to listen to the things that you talk about. I need to
thank
start
you.
Talking less and listening more.
Thank you, too. I enjoyed it very much again.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care, everybody.